All right, new week. Bit of a new handle on TV as well. I just saw the Overdrive signage for the first time.
I did.
Shout out to Pinty's for jumping on board. We love a Pinty's.
Yes, we do. And I got a note from a fan of the show saying, this is right in our wheelhouse. You want to talk about wings and fingers and all of that. Like, this is couching material.
It's
this
the best.
This is
I have
Hayes
been eating
on a
Pinty's
Sunday.
Buffy Chicky Bites for a long, long time.
Buffy Chicky Bites?
Oh, the Buffy Chickies from Pinty's are off the charts good. I mean, I have
possible
been locked in for years.
New segment, similar to level of concern, just how hungry is he? Just how hungry is this person to make a trade, win a Super Bowl?
I like
and
it.
It's just a different level of food and a feed hungry that person is.
You're right, but we all know that if, like, when we're stressed, you have a beer or whatever, but you get a growl on.
Mm-hmm,
like that,
mm-hmm.
We could be talking about level of concern in wings.
Well, like my level of concerns on Mondays, it is starting to get flashback type vibes in the Hayes household, because that's when I was really putting on the clinic with Pinty's back in the day. And I would jump on the scale on a Monday and be like, what the hell was I up to all weekend? What was I eating? What was I drinking? What was I doing? Did I move? Like, was I physically active at any point in the last 48 hours?
When you were at your meatiest, what was the feeding schedule? Like, what kind of groceries are we talking about?
Well,
was it just awful 24/7?
Yeah.
But Pinty's is in the rotation, I would think.
Oh,
right?
Pinty's is outstanding. Yeah, it's great food. It's got wings, it's got bites, it's got ribs. So, yeah, we could definitely do that. We could get very creative. So we want to thank them for coming aboard. And, I think it says something about our reputation where people are like, oh, that's a really good fit, like wings and ribs and stuff. So shout out to Pinty's. And coming off a weekend like that, you know, there was a lot of time to just kind of sit back and relax and watch basically every sport you could possibly want. So many big moments.
What was your top moment? Like, I mean, I've tried to fit as much as I could in. I didn't get as much golf as I wanted to, but the NFL was fantastic. The hockey game, like, what was your top moment, your takeaway, other than injuries? It sounds like all hell's breaking loose in the NFL.
Man, the injuries are a real issue. Like, that's not one moment in particular, but that is the story of the weekend if you're an NFL fan. So this was before the season even began. Von Miller was done. Derwin James done. Gerald McCoy done. Three monster superstars on the defensive side of the ball. Like, game changers. Wins above replacement type guys where you win ball games with them on the field. And then Saquon Barkley done for the year. Nick Bosa done for the year. McCaffrey out a month to a month and a half. Bruce Irvin likely done for the year. Cortland Sutton done for the year in Denver. Malik Hooker done in Indy. Drew Lock out 3-5. We're waiting to hear on Garoppolo. Like, it's just a mess. I mean, there's so many big, big names. We're talking massive impact guys who are done.
Right.
And, yeah, I guess that would have been the biggest NFL story of the weekend, but I don't know. I mean, maybe it was the game last night, the nightcap last night, where Russell Wilson goes off and Cam, he almost had it. He almost got in there. And what a story that would have been if
he did.
I
don't know about that play, man.
You
marched down there. I don't know about that play.
I was watching it too, because I was on a Zoom with some buddies, and I'm like, they're going to do it. Now, that Pete Carroll's face, is that it? Pete Carroll?
Pete Carroll in Seattle.
He had a Scrabble face because, like, think about just the percentages. Like, if you want the ball in somebody's hands, a quarterback of Cam Newton's ilk, like, he's such a big man. You're like, just give him the ball. He's going to bully his way through. What they were on the one?
They were on the one. He had already run for two touchdowns.
Yeah.
Like, he looks like vintage Cam Newton now. This is MVP Cam Newton. And everyone's wondering, what were other people waiting for? How could you possibly not sign him? Why would you let Belichick get his hands on him? Well, that's what happened. You know, there are a lot of teams in this league that had the opportunity to sign Cam Newton or keep him in Carolina, and it didn't happen. And now look who is basking in the reward of a healthy, motivated, just beast of a quarterback in Cam Newton. Like, trying to tackle him, there are two quarterbacks over the past 20 years who have taken the most licks, but it's got to be really, really difficult to even psych yourself up to go at them. and that's Cam and Roethlisberger. Like, the two of them are back. The two of them look like they're back in form. Pittsburgh with another win yesterday. They're 2-0. But that was a crazy, crazy game and a crazy ending and a finish on the line. And you guys see Belichick post-game, where it was like a virtual post-game. It was really fuzzy.
He looked like he was in space or something.
Yeah.
Like, so was Cam Newton. They had like an alien outline or something. It was weird.
I swear to God, they do it on purpose. Like, it's only, you know, Andy Reid was a lock to wear that visor.
Yeah.
And Belichick with virtual stuff, you know that he's like, all right, put some form of like, what's that called? Like a filter. Like, yep. put a Instagram filter on mine. Like, I swear to God, he did that on purpose.
That wouldn't surprise me. They're still using, like, Windows 95.
Yeah.
And it's some bogus filter where he's like, I don't want really people to know what I'm all about. But he was asked a question where the answer is totally predictable, honest, but also another example of where Belichick just will never be easy to deal with. Like, you know what the media member was asking. He wanted to know, like, take us through your thought process. You have one play, and you decide on a run with Cam. You know, and they got manhandled at the line. Credit to Seattle. Seattle's defensive line just busted them up. Cam actually didn't even get that close to the goal line.
I was shocked. He was ass over tea kettle. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. They flipped him.
Like, well, that's just pure – that's just a brawl in the trenches, man. That's like old school football. Who's going to win this battle? Who's going to hold on to this line of scrimmage? And Seattle did it last night. But massive play, like probably the play of the weekend, although there were a ton of examples of quote-unquote plays of the weekend. But it's Sunday Night Football, Pat Seattle, great game, final play. Doesn't get much bigger than that. Hey, Bill, you think you can run us through your thought process? Here's what he had to say.
About what you would think it would be. We had one play to score, and we tried to go with what we thought was our best play. What else is there to think about?
Okay. Thank you, Bill. You see it
he's
back
not
at
wrong.
Foxborough. No,
it's not
of
wrong.
It's not,
like, you hand the ball to Cam and have Cam bully his way through. And would you argue that 9 out of 10 times or 8 out of 10 times he gets in?
Yeah.
Well, when he's done it twice in a game, don't you want to mix it up a little bit?
That's what I thought.
That was my only thought process watching that play. I'm like, this man's done it twice already in the game.
Yeah.
Don't you want to? Or maybe there's reverse psychology thinking there's no way in hell he's going to do it again. But it's I don't know. I just hate seeing that play. I'm like, couldn't you come up with something a little more creative than that?
Yeah, but I thought it was going to be a fake, and then him just float one into the end zone for, you know, whoever.
Although they didn't really have any wide receivers on the field. Like, they loaded up double tight ends, and they had, you know, they were just basically planting the seed for Seattle to realize that they're just going to try to, you know, bulldozer this in. And Cam is getting a ton of run plays called for him. I don't know if he can hold up throughout a whole season because he's going to take his licks, but he looks very good, and there's a lot coming out of the NFL, and we'll get to that throughout the afternoon. The U.S. Open, Bryson DeChambeau, he put forth an absolute clinic, and that was a masterpiece. Like, that's what it will be remembered as, to play 4 rounds of even par or under at winged foot at the U.S. Open conditions is a masterpiece, nothing short of it.
Yeah, every par four when they were on the tee and they would show the hole, it was like 485, 499, 502 par fours. And this guy just kept hitting his driver, and the rough was like a non-factor for him. Other guys were having to pitch out sideways. I like one commentator on the weekend. He goes, now it's the weekend. It's kind of matted down. I'm like, matted down? There's no fans. There's no one there. Who the hell is it matted down by?
Right.
But this guy continued to rip his driver. And he putted the ball beautifully, and I'll tell you what, though. I like what he's done. I kind of like the guy, but watching him play, I think his caddy really has no idea what the hell he's talking about. If you saw the exchanges between the caddy, it was like, because this guy, he's not normal the way he approaches it. He, like, walks up and paces the putts and the elevation of the green. And he's asking his caddy, and his caddy sometimes is just like, I don't know, man. And he's pumping numbers out, but I agree with your statement. It was a masterpiece, but the way he goes about it and watching him, it was just, it's not that fun to watch, to be honest. But
is he a hero?
Awesome.
Like, is he an unlikable guy, this DeChambeau guy?
No, I don't think he's unlikable. He's different. I think it was a hero move on 18. Like, dude, you're up 6 shots. Just putt the ball. Like, you know, I get it. It's your moment. You want to be locked in. He's looking at his little goofy playbook there for 15 minutes.
His playbook, I wanted to light that book on fire. It was just every shot up and down. Like, Jamie, this guy is so, like, off the beaten path that if he figures out it's going to be kind of moist or whatever in the morning and with dew on the grass, he'll go on the range and make his caddy spray the golf ball with like a mist, so it's
I love it though. Like
I know
so
it's
that's
crazy
a progressive
stuff,
thinker.
But
it's a progressive
very
thinker,
progressive.
A guy, and a guy who wants he's thinking outside the box, going, I want the conditions that I'm going to face out on the course. I get that, but like the book, I never understood when you've played the course repeatedly.
Well, the book has got different yardages, different breaks. It's got stuff that nobody knows about.
He's made notes from practice rounds and all that. Like everyone
going into Augusta in a month, I would say he is probably got to be a heavy favorite, doesn't he? And what are other golfers going to do? Do you not think, like, they would be saying, I got to get in the gym and start mashing this golf ball farther than I am right now? Because he's hitting it 50 by the longest players on tour.
Well, it depends on the course, because he was asked after the round – I think Todd Lewis asked him, like, do you feel like this style of golf where you're stepping up and mashing everything in? Most importantly, he knows where to miss. Like, that's a big part of it. Yes, he was in the rough, but he was on the right side of the rough. He was on the right side of the fairway where to miss. And he was asked, do you think this is basically going to set you up for a run here? And he said, yes, I feel very good about it, but not with every course. And he referenced East Lake, where he got torched. He did not play well there. And he said the makeup of that course did not allow me to bomb it, because they put bunkers in certain places, and that's what they're going to do in the future with courses. They'll be like, all right, if you want to launch it over there, we're going to put a big bunker right there, 350 out.
Oh, yeah. If he goes to Augusta National and absolutely destroys that place, they're going to start tiger-proofing 2020 version for DeChambeau.
For DeChambeau, exactly. Because they're not going to let a guy shoot 25 under at Augusta. They're just not going to allow
it. When Tiger Woods started ripping it 35 by everybody, all of a sudden the tee started going way back.
Yep.
And who the hell? There's no more room to. There's nowhere to go.
Well, you know what they'll do is they'll make it tighter off the tee so that you can't take on the trees for them. It'll be like you have to go straight and then you can go left. Because what he was doing,
he just went over trees.
He's going over trees, bombing trees. And listen, full credit to him. He doesn't have to explain a thing. The course was there. Everyone was saying no one could beat it. He didn't just beat it. He smothered it. He destroyed it. Like, that was a masterpiece. Three rounds under par and an even par on Saturday is as good as you can play winged foot. No one can play it that well. I don't think in the history of golf. That's how well he played. But there are a couple of things that will be remembered from this tournament. One, the fact that it was COVID, there's no fans. That applies to every sporting event in 2020, right? That almost goes without saying now. We're used to it. But 2020, no fans, winged foot, weird experience. Two, masterpiece / coming out party for DeChambeau. He's been on the tour for a while. Everyone knows what he can do, but he put it together. Oh, you and I, we've been talking about this for months. We said if he puts it together at a major, he's gonna lap the field one of these times, and he did it. I think it also, it's the end of the era for Tiger and Phil at the U.S. Open. Like, those two are never going to win another U.S. Open. They're never going to compete for one. It's not possible. Like, Phil... I don't even know if he'll play in one again. Tiger will be there every year. Next year, I think, is at Torrey Pines. He's won there a lot. But I just don't think he can keep up with these guys in these conditions with how tough those courses are if he's not going to be playing enough.
Well, that's
I think it's over for like Tiger Phil at the U.S. Open.
It's like he's defeated Tiger Woods before the tournament. You noticed a couple majors last year. I think one was at Bethpage where Koepka won. It's almost like in his face he knows that he can't compete at that golf course.
Mm-hmm.
He just can't do it. So who knows what we can ask Noda. We're talking to Noda Begay later in the show, just what he thinks is in store for Tiger Woods moving forward. Because after he won at East Lake, there was kind of a sparkle in his eye where he's like, maybe he's getting this back and he's going to give us one last run. But then he won the Masters, and after that, it's kind of fizzled out where I don't even know what kind of game he's going to have left or what his motivation is.
Yeah.
We said this before the tournament at the U.S. Open. If he's not going to go out there and play, you can't just sit in Florida and hit balls in your backyard and then just show up at a major venue and expect to tee it well. Can't do it.
I think he'll be competitive at Augusta. Like, the next two majors are at the Masters. I think he can be in the field. He can be in contention, make the weekend. That course has never changed. It won't change. He knows it. They're not going to try to crush these guys with conditions. It's going to play the way it has played. he will be, I don't know if he'll be in contention, but I think he'll make the weekend in both events. You know, we talked about this. At a British Open, depending on the course and the conditions, I think he can stick around. U.S. Open, PGA Championship, too tough. Like, they're going to be too tough for a guy that doesn't play enough. But, yeah, we'll get into that with Nota Begay just after 6. Game 2 of the Cup Final tonight. There's a lot of smoke out there that Stamkos could be playing. You know, does he almost have to play? If he's at 51%, does he almost have to play? We'll come back and talk about that. Yeah. And Alex Petrangelo, it sounds like he's hitting the market. Where does he end up? At what price? What's the term? Might the Leafs be lurking in the background, maybe even in the foreground? Maybe they're right at the front of the line.
They're involved in every player. Every player that's out there, the Leafs are getting.
Well, you never know. We'll touch on that more. Should they be involved in that? We'll get into that conversation. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Sticking with the U.S. Open, I want your honest opinion on this hypothetical. You know that James Duffy always has stupid hypotheticals, and we were going back and forth with possible scenarios, and here's one for you. Do you think if on Sunday DeChambeau was at 6-under and me and Duffy and Carlo played a scramble at 6-under, it was just kind of a two-horse race. We were Wolf. Do you think us three as a scramble beat DeChambeau?
No.
No.
Come on!
Absolutely not.
You're a joke for saying okay, it's a scramble.
Isn't Duffy a 90? What is he? What is he shooting?
Hey, yeah. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
I understand.
Right?
It doesn't matter. It's a scramble.
We hit the best shot.
You're talking best ball, I think. Is,
right,
yes.
I get it. It's best ball.
So it's like you don't have a bad shot. You go to the fairway wherever the ball is. You go to, like you don't.
You do have a bad shot. You do have a bad shot because it doesn't matter. All three of you are not as good as DeChambeau.
Yeah, there's no way because the three of you, you could get off the tee and get out into the distance. Duffy and Carlo don't hit the ball far enough. They hit it like me. So you got to rely on your tee shot pretty much every single time. And, yeah, you each get three putts, but it doesn't matter on those greens. Like, the three of you would never one putt, ever. You'd never one putt. So you wouldn't eagle 9 like he did. You wouldn't. And no.
I think we beat him.
I think you'd collectively shoot 4 or 5 over. I think he'd beat you by 10 strokes.
What about this? And be serious. What if you're added to the group as the fourth guy?
Then we're 2 or 3 over. I would bring 2 or 3 strokes to the table. I would shave that down by 2 or 3. That's it. That's all I would bring.
You think us as a group, a foursome, are over par in a scramble?
No, I don't believe. Yes, I do. The way it was playing, yeah, I do.
I thought you said that you would beat DeChambeau. You're not beating him.
No,
like that's like saying, okay, let's put Vasilevsky in net and get Joe from the bridge. Glenn Sheeler, who's a pretty good hockey player, and then you,
all three of you can play net somehow,
right?
And whoever makes the best stop,
right? Like
that's the one you get to take.
It's a dumb comparison. It's a dumb comparison.
It's a tough one. It's a bit of a stretch. There really isn't a hockey comparison to like a best ball scenario in golf.
I'm telling you, it's the proper comparison if I lay it out properly. Joe from the bridge trying to score on Vasilevsky. That's you guys playing against DeChambeau. That's what it is. A super elite player against somebody who's good, a rec player. You guys are rec players. You're not pros.
They're not pros. They're better than whatever Joe from the bridge could bring on the ice. I mean, without seeing Joe from the bridge, yeah, maybe he's a ringer, and maybe, you know, his name rings out all over the GTA. Oh, Joe from the bridge is on the other team.
Ball hockey, apparently, too.
Ball hockey's a stud. I have seen that with my own eyes. Joe from the bridge knows how to ball hockey with the best of them. DeChambeau would be in trouble for.
What's Carlos' handicap?
I don't know. He's an 8 or a 9. You know, myself, and Duffy would shoot somewhere in the low to mid 80s on the average course from the blue tees. You know,
and
like that's kind of our standard.
O's a 2, right? You're like a 2-0,
something like that.
Okay,
all right,
so
let's move on here. It's a not happening. It's a hypothetical,
it's not happening.
But you have no shot. No, DeChambeau would lap you.
Okay.
End of discussion. Game 2 of the Cup Final tonight. I think if Stamkos is 51%, he's got to play. Like, the only way he can't play is if Cooper tells him he's not playing. But I would think Stamkos, he's 30 years old. He's this close to a cup. Second time he's been in a cup final. He didn't win it last time. He may not get another chance. He's injury prone. He's got insurance with his contract. You have got to play tonight. If you're 51%, I think you have to play.
How many more shots do you really have? You just laid out for all the reasons. They've been there once, didn't win it. He's 30 years old now. You never know. Like, Tampa's got a good team. They're set up for a while with the pieces right. They have in place. It's so hard to win, though. But I nobody knows. The one thing that nobody knows is where his mindset is, because you would think that he would be dying to get back in there. And God knows what the injury is, some oblique or groin. I don't know. You would think he has to play just for that energy, like to get the guys going, because they had nothing. Dallas did to Tampa what Tampa did to the Islanders in game one of the last series. The Islanders, you didn't really agree with it, Hayes, but they had no shot. They had to fly across the country. They had no legs, no jump. They got destroyed in game one. And that's what happened to Tampa. They just finished the series. They had one day in between. They didn't really have a chance to win that hockey game. But as far as Stamkos, I got him playing. I just think that... Like, you got to be thinking as a player, what the hell else could I possibly be waiting for? What are you waiting for? It's the finals. There's nowhere else to go.
But what's the injury? Like, that's the thing. Like, we can't – like, I have no idea what his injury is. It's got to be groin, hip, knee, you know, something lower body that is hampering his skating. Like, if he's playing with – like, if it's a broken bone or something, you could work around it. Like, to me, it has to be something to do with skating. Or, you know, back or something, stability. Like, he's a competitor. He's going to want to be
out there.
What the hell
is he going? Why is he skating then? Like, what?
That's my point. But there's a difference between morning skate, and the tempo of a Stanley Cup final. Like, that's the real. I think if you could put him in a jersey and put him on the power play, then maybe you look at that, because their power play hasn't been firing at all.
No, two or three shifts a period. Maybe on the, who knows, the fourth line. Like, give me two or three shifts a period. If you can give me some power play time, that's all I'm really asking for. He's got to be able to do that.
Maybe he doesn't trust himself, you know, and I would almost appreciate that. And,
as far as what?
Well, maybe he doesn't think he can bring enough to the table to help his team tonight. And that actually would be the definition of leadership, saying, guys, if I play, I'm taking a spot off a guy who's going to do something. Like, my heart's telling me to play, but I can't play. So I'm not going to be a hero just because I'm good guy Steven Stamkos, the captain, and we're this close to a cup championship. You know, like that's the honesty he's got to have with himself. Mm-hmm. You know, I would think he's dying to play. You know, as I said, if you're 51% and you feel like I can go, I would think he's going. But if he's 49% and he's like, I might screw this up. You know, if there's any doubt that he could hurt his team. It's almost the epitome of leadership to take yourself out of it to allow your team more success if he feels like that's what he's dealing with. And I would think that's been the case for the better part of a round or two now.
Oh,
like, he's been close for a while. So the fact that he didn't play game one, you know, would suggest that there was a little bit of doubt. He's been skating for a while. It feels like he's close, you know, but maybe that's the issue. Is he doesn't trust himself.
Well, the one counterpoint to your statement of he might be taking something away from a guy in the lineup, that guy in the lineup is a seventh defenseman because they've been going with 11 forwards.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there is no other forward. He's not taking that one spot because that guy's not even been there.
Yeah, that's valid. And it's kind of goofy the way they've been doing that for as long as they have. Like, it's just very unconventional, but I guess they feel they have to, you know.
Well, and there's no use in dressing a 12th forward if Coop doesn't want to put him on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what? I would rather have a position of need, because they're deep. Their forwards are deep because their top three lines can play, and they can play a lot of minutes. So that I think Coop's like, I would rather sprinkle the extra minutes to these skilled forwards or this deep forward group than if I lose a defenseman. Now I'm down to five, and they do it by committee outside of Hedman. So I think I like the thinking, but, you know, to me, I wish I had a crystal ball to know exactly what Stamkos' injury was, because to me, I agree with you. I think he can get on the ice. It's just, God forbid it's a concussion or something like that. There's no ways you can do that, right?
No, you can't. Of course not. You can't be anything but 100% when you're returning from a concussion. Any other injury, for the most part.
Right, for the most part.
You can play through. And I do think there's a different situation from a younger guy, you know, who maybe you don't have as much faith in. Maybe a younger guy who feels like I got my whole career ahead of me. Maybe a younger guy who's going into a contract negotiation. Let's be honest, these guys are human. I know we like to Hollywood this up and Disney it up. Oh, everyone would put their life on the line for the cup. not over the contract, not many guys, you know, like that. You got to get paid, but he doesn't have that concern. Like he's right. locked in. He's made millions. He's got millions coming to him. He's 30. He's the captain. You know,
and
they're
go down
a game.
2-0 tonight, aren't they? I don't think they're coming back from it. So
well,
the time
Dallas,
will be now for me.
I thought they were flying in the third period, Tampa. Like, Dallas still plays that rope-a-dope, like, we're just going to hold on for dear life and try to block shots and leave it to Hudobin to make some big saves. And
Tampa got rolling, but, Dallas was fantastic the first half of the game. They were the better team, but Tampa in the third, like, that was
they
desperate.
Were cooking at that
they
point.
Were cooking, and the goalie was really good. I still think that this is a 6 or 7 gamer, and I still think Tampa is the better team. But you know what? They have to prove it.
I thought Vegas was the better team. It doesn't matter now.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed.
Right? Vegas
yep.
went home.
You're right. You're right.
And Dallas is kind of using the blueprint. It's not quite, you know, point for point. But when you look at the way St. Louis did what they did a year ago, and now what Dallas is doing, even with the coaching turnover, although albeit for totally different purposes. New goalie than who you thought it would be, right? Like at the beginning of last season, you'd figure Jake Allen won them a cup, not Jordan Binnington. Right. Same thing here, Bishop to Hudobin. And two teams in the Central, two teams that are big and kind of slower, but they drag you in. And it feels like it's eerily similar to what St. Louis did a year ago. You know, and that's the two teams are built that way.
They're heavy.
They're big, heavy teams that don't play an overly entertaining style, quote unquote, in terms of run and gun and odd man rushes, and you know. But they try to slow the pace down. They'll play ugly, and they trust their system and they trust kind of how they operate, and it's worked for them.
But they, you know, if you look at their young guys, like they're, you know, their team has more pace than what you're saying. But I know what you mean. Like they will. There's no ice out there. Like, that's what they do. Like, there's no free-flowing ice for anybody to get going because they just hit you with layers, and they you know, they're physical and every check. But, like, they're like that Heiskanen is such a good player.
So
like
good.
He's so good.
So good.
And you know, their young guys have contributed, but it's their big dogs that are, you know, night in and night out. Like, Jamie Benn, I think, has found, like, he's a beast again. Like, yeah, I think he knows, like, hey, even if I'm not scoring, I'm going to get a piece of you. Like,
yeah, he's in every scrum. He's up there. He's mucking it up. And he's tough as nails. Like, he doesn't care who's on the opposition that's going to come tap on his door. Luke Shen, go ahead. You know, come
exactly.
tap it. I'm waiting for you. But the physicality is very noticeable. You know, like, that is what sticks out from a year ago with St. Louis. And with Dallas, it's not, you know, you're not going out of your way to crush people all the time. You just take a piece, as we always say. And when you look at the amount of hits that are being thrown by the teams that were hanging around the latest, it's teams like New York, the Islanders, it's teams like Vegas, Dallas, even Tampa throws more hits than you'd think based on their history.
Just finishing your check.
Finishing checks, exactly. And to bring it back. Toronto.
How's that going to apply to them?
Yeah, the Leafs just, they don't. They're bottom five in the league every game in terms of hits per game, hits per 60 minutes, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't apply. That logic of chipping away,
well,
the Leafs don't chip away that way.
There's always going to be somebody that says, oh, those hits are because you don't have the puck. That's the counter argument. Oh, you're chasing the puck. That's why you have so many hits. But you watch them play, it's just finishing your check. You look at that first goal of the game last night, and you can say what you want, whether you think it was a hit from behind or what it was. That's what finishing your check does. It eliminates point from the play, and all of a sudden somebody loses their man, and then you got a wide-open D-man who puts it in. That's the benefit from it.
And that actually even go a step further. Oh, like, point turns on that play. There's a reason why he puts himself in a bad spot. Like, that, it's
same
a hit
as the,
from behind. But
McAvoy hit on Paquette. And McAvoy. He turned right at the last second. That's what's going to happen.
But you're right, like, bringing it back to the Leafs, like, the only thing I would argue is that what's really on display is the regular season and the playoffs don't compare to each other. Like, they're just two
and they
different
never have.
Worlds.
They never
no,
have.
They're just two different worlds, though. You can have an amazing regular season team that controls the puck and you know, all checks all the boxes, but then when it applies to playoff hockey where everything is at stake and no hit goes, you know, unnoticed, and guys are physical and blocking shots and everything that, that comes with playoff hockey, how does that style translate? It doesn't. You have to be able to adapt. And that's where I think the Leafs will have to learn how to win in the playoffs. If they want to play that style, go ahead, play that style, but they're still going to have to learn to fight through that style in the playoffs, because if not, they're going to get pushed out.
Well, and that leads you into Alex Pietrangelo, who did it last year. And right. Now it sounds like those negotiations are getting ugly. I mean, it's gone to the press, and guys like Dregs and others are reporting, and Dregs spoke to Pietrangelo, and it sounds like the Blues are offering, you know, about what, seven and a half, seven a year, give or take, and don't want to give up an inch in terms of how the contract is structured. In other words, I would assume bonus money, maybe even no trade, no movement. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if they were looking at a guy who's 31 and said, we can't give you a no movement. Like, we might have to trade you in a couple of years. And as a result, maybe he's going to be available in a couple of weeks come free agent frenzy. And yeah. I guess the bar is set at 7.7, and that's a team that knows him and I presume loves him in St. Louis, and they've decided that's where we calculated your worth. Doesn't mean it can't change.
No, that's
now
the hometown discount.
Now it's gone public, it might.
That's to me, honestly, Brian, sorry to interrupt. Like, to me, that's the home. Like, we want you at 7.7, but maybe we can, let's round it up to 8.
Yeah.
Let's say $8 million in St. Louis. Let's see what you can get on the free agent market. So, you know, people that are tying him to Toronto, he's not getting just $8 million to come to Toronto. Like, he can get that in St. Louis. He's going to have to get more for any of these teams for him to go on there. Because I think if push came to shove, they could get $8 million out of St. Louis.
Yes, I agree with you. I would think 8x8, I would think.
I right.
mean, the length of the
like
deal,
I
haven't
know.
Seen any yeah. reports on it, but maybe it's a 6-year deal in St. Louis, 7, who knows.
Right. Right.
And you're right. I think if you're at 7.7, you're not going to lose a guy over $300,000 who's that important to you, your captain,
right.
et cetera. It's right. basically 8. You know, they're
right.
basically saying, we see you around 8, which means for him to really want to leave, he feels either disrespected by that, so he's
right.
willing to take almost anything else because screw you guys, look what I've done for you, I'm gone. If you're willing to treat me this way, which would
right.
not be the first athlete to ever do that.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be the first guy to say, really? I'm your
yeah.
guy, I'm your captain, I won you a cup for the first time in 40 years, and you're going to lowball me?
Take you know, less somewhere else just to piss them off because they're pissed off.
The emotions, you know how it works in negotiations.
Yeah.
We've all been through them in different capacities. It gets emotional. So that is one angle. On the flip side, it's, okay, if you are looking simply for money, how high can you really go if your other team's in the league with the cap structure being what it is, COVID having a serious impact on the next 2 or 3 years at a minimum, 31 years old, and his own team is telling you it's 8. Like, I don't know
right.
if you can give him 10.5 now. Like, that would look incredibly desperate.
Yeah. No.
Like, if you really want him and you have to give him 10.5 and you have that much space, I guess you can't. The Leafs can't.
Those
the
deals,
Leafs certainly
10.5,
cannot do that.
Those Doughty deals and those Carlson deals, those things were done in an hour. Or maybe not an hour, but those were knowing the team was giving him that money right away.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not going to, whatever, 8, they're not going to 10.5.
Well,
you're
right, though, because it seemed like, again, I'm not privy to that information, but it seemed like the marketplace was already set for those players. You know, Doughty's going to get 11. Carlson's going to get 11. What is the marketplace for Alex Pietrangelo? Like, his agency, I think, would know some of it. I mean, obviously,
well,
St. Louis
obviously,
believes
yeah.
it's 8. But
don't you think he got screwed in the timing, too? Like, if his deal was up and he was unrestricted the summer after Doughty, he could have just pulled an Erik Karlsson, could he have? He could have just said, well, and then the cup fell into place, but that's what that guy gets, so go ahead, that's what I'm getting. And
yeah.
now he's sitting around and it's not even really in that ballpark.
Well,
his
yeah.
deal,
COVID,
the
COVID's
timing
changed
of
everything, and he's older. He'll be 31 when the deal
right.
kicks in, when he plays his
I know,
first
but
game
as
the
you. Player, you always think this, Brian. You're like, I didn't bring COVID around here. I'm not responsible
right.
for COVID.
Right.
And you feel like you've been screwed personally. You're like, oh, all of a sudden the gravy train's stopping and it's my turn. You're pissed, man.
Well,
as soon as the talk of, like, even Roman Josi's deal, 9.5 or whatever that is, oh, so that train's over too? And all of a sudden I'm the guy that just won the Stanley Cup and one of the best defensemen in the league, and I all of a sudden, COVID happens, and I gotta what? I pay the price for it?
And,
He's probably pissed at that whole notion.
Well, aren't you pissed, too, that Justin Falk gets a deal and he hadn't played a minute for your team.
That's the King Daddy Topper contract.
Like, that's
you're
the
like,
one
what,
that...
what? He didn't play one game for this organization, and maybe you brought him in as a support valve in case Pietrangelo did leave, but
right.
Why was that necessary? Why the extension, the whole nine? That one is puzzling to me.
Well, if he hits the market, you know, there's going to be a ton of teams interested. I mean,
well,
that goes without saying,
yeah,
of course.
Absolutely.
You have to.
Yeah.
He's a, you know, at a minimum, he's a top 10 defenseman in the league. He might be a top 5 defenseman or close to it. When he's on his game and he's healthy, he's a right shot defenseman. He's going to eat up a ton of minutes. He's a great player. And there's a lot of teams in this league that would look at that and say, that's what we need, you know, even if we have to move other pieces. But in Toronto, you know, it's you've already locked in on Matthews, Tavares, and Marner. Those three are sticking around at basically 11 to 11.5. That's a huge commitment for three guys. You
right.
can't – I don't think you can add $9 million on top of that for a fourth guy. I just don't see how that's going to work.
How like, are you going to fill out a roster with that? Like, you're literally – I was talking on Leafs Lunch. You're dumpster diving for every other position player.
Right.
They're basically doing it now. How bad would it be if they bring in another high-priced talent with a massive contract?
Yeah.
You're dumpster diving, man.
I mean, as you guys, I'm sure, saw on the weekend, you saw different names trending on Twitter. So right now it's Marner that's trending on Twitter, and it was Nylander. Well, if you can get Pietrangelo, then trade Nylander, do all. Like, everyone's trying to figure out how Toronto would make it work. I'm certain they could make it work, but are they going to be able to make it work with the vision that they have? Like, and the point being is if they believe that Dermott is a four, if they believe that, you know, Liljegren's going to be a player, if Sandin's going to be a player, if, you know, Nick Robertson is going to slide into a role that makes Zach Hyman expendable. Like, that's – I'm sure Kyle's laid it all out on a board of what his team's going to look like in the next 3 months, the next 6 months, and the next 4 years. Like, that's the challenge. I think they could make it work, to be honest. I just don't know where the breaking point, where that line is, where it's like too top heavy. They already are top heavy. Like,
yeah, they're the most top heavy team in the league.
Correct.
You know, by a substantial margin.
Right.
There's no other team that's close that has three guys getting paid $11 million. So
right.
You're already in that game. There are, of course, ways to do the math, to work it out. And there are ways that you can totally justify, okay, Pietrangelo is clearly going to be more effective than this player or these combination of players. So you move on from them, you bring him in, maybe you're still at the same kind of number overall, and you're still working from where you're working, only
right.
Your team's been improved because you brought in a stud like this who helps a position of need. So I can wrap my head around all that. But what I would hope the Leafs have learned from past negotiations is at some point you've got to put your stake in the ground, and if you want them, okay, go for them, but set a price and even set a term. Because I would be reluctant to go 7 years.
No kidding.
And say, listen, we really like you. You know, you're free. We'll give you 8.5, but it's a 5-year deal loaded with bonuses, full no movement, take it or leave it. Like, they can't continue to be full term, full this, you own us, whatever you want. We're desperate. We need you. You got to stop at some point. Because I've been saying this since the second they signed that Tavares deal. I think they got burned on that. Like, I would have gone to him and said, if you really want to be here, you're the local guy, we'll give you 7, but it's got to be 10. It can't be 11. But it was 11, you know.
Right.
And then we know what happened with Marner and Nylander and Matthews, and those guys got spectacular contracts. At some point, you can't – it's not EA Sports. It's not a video game. I love that guy, so I'm just going to get him and worry about it later. It's got to be – I love him at this price because that's what St. Louis is doing. And guess what? They won a cup last year, and they're better than you today. So if they're better than you today and they're telling you 7-7 is the price, it better not be 9.5 in Toronto or you got duped. It's that easy.
Well, you have to find out, and to me, you have to find out exactly what where the player is willing to bend to. Like, what is his, I guess, what's his end game? He's probably told his agency, like, I would like to play here for this amount of money, and figure out the, you know, they might have a number in mind, and it's not even, you know, $10 million a year. It may be I need $50 million over. Get me $50 million. Figure it out how that's going to work, and that's where you have a lot of smart people breaking down the numbers, including, you know, if you're the Leafs, That they've got some of the
they
best.
They can make it
guys.
Work. Every team in the league can find a way to make everything work. It's just, do you work on a spreadsheet or do you work on the ice? Those are two different things. Yeah. Because this team has worked on the spreadsheet the past couple of years. They found a way to get guys signed and guys worked. What's it done for them? They haven't. They're not good enough yet. They got a lot of great pieces. They're still a playoff team. It's not like they're terrible. They're in the middle of the pack, and they want to take a step up. Now, Petrangelo, I think, would definitely help that in terms of on the ice. But I think they need even more than that, you know, to fill out the rest of their roster. What are you going to do with your goaltender? What are you going to do with Hyman, who's up in another year and is, I think, an integral part of the puzzle? And, you know, there's always moving parts. So spreadsheet, one thing. Ice, another. They got to find a way to make both work, like every other team in the league is trying to do.
Well, and you're right. Like you mentioned it at the starting of this conversation, Toronto won't be the only team looking at him.
Exactly.
No kidding, man.
Like, of course,
if I'm the Winnipeg Jets, and I know Winnipeg may not be the sexiest of cities, but that's a hell of a team too. Like there's some. You've got a Vezina winning goaltender, and you've got a deep core up front. And Josh,
Jamie, that team makes some additions. A guy like Petrangelo, and they upgrade their second center position. They could put themselves right back into the mix as being one of the contending teams.
That's what I mean. Because you know what? You know who's going to be, I think, available and Winnipeg should be looking at? A guy like Tyler Johnson. You know, when Tampa has to sell off some pieces here in the offseason because Vasilevsky's deal kicks in. Like, to me, there's going to be a lot of musical chairs, a lot of moving parts. But, you know, it comes back to Toronto. Toronto should be looking, but guaranteed there's five or six other teams that are, you know, calling Petro's representatives going, yeah, we'll take a look and
Absolutely.
See, you know, what it takes
I
to
would
put him here.
I think every team in the league has to make that call. I mean, how often does a guy like of this caliber become available? And he's worth a lot of money in term. I guess he's got a great case to make. But, that you know, different teams have different priorities. Different teams, I think, have different setups. Different teams have different pitches in terms of what he might be looking for. And I think what happened with Tavares was they signed him and they said, we'll figure everything else out. I think when you get in a situation like Petrangelo, you better have everything else figured out before you sign him. Like, you better know, what does this mean for Riley in 2 years? What does it mean for Hyman? What are we doing, Freddie? Where are we going with this, that, and the other? You know, it can't just be a, hey, we're so happy we got him, now we'll figure it out. Because that burned them the last time.
Right.
We'll pick up on this with Ray. Ray will join us in about 20 minutes. Get his take on Petrangelo, what ends up happening with St. Louis. It may be a moot point in the end. He may just re-sign in a few days, you know, and everything works out, and they work out a deal, and he never even gets to free agency in game two of the Cup Final tonight. So that's coming up with Ray. We got Marcellus Wiley at 5:30 on the play of Russell Wilson. How about the play of Josh Allen?
Yes.
The Bills are 2-0, and Allen looks spectacular.
Chris Sims called him the best quarterback in the NFL right now. I thought it was a stretch.
That was a bit rich.
Did you hear the comment?
I did not hear that. That is a take and a strong one.
It's a bit rich.
That is high-end pepper.
Not me. He said, I think he might have said best player in the NFL.
That is a volcanic take. That's not hot. That's eruption.
Yes.
That is Volcano Sims.
And that was during the pregame where Russell Wilson and Cam Newton were playing in that game.
Okay. Well,
so he said it, not me. Don't even at me, as people say.
Yep. Well, and Mahomes is 2-0. Oh. Lamar Jackson's 2-0. Those guys are still pretty good, too.
Brady won.
Brady did. Well, I didn't think he looked great, though, still. But anyway, we'll get into that with Marcellus at 5:30. Notre Dame at 6.
He didn't look great, huh? He didn't look great?
He looked okay. He looked okay. He lost a fumble, threw another pick.
Just okay.
He was James Reimer in Detroit back in the day. Overdrive continues, TSN 1058 on TSN 4. You guys see this report of Paul George going hero postgame after Game 7 in the Clippers room? I guess Shams Charania is reporting, which means someone that hates Paul George leaked it to him that you're not going to believe this guy. He had 10 points in Game 7. Playoff George. Or playoff Paul, he's been brutal throughout his career in big moments, and he went for the, you know, the Rudy speech. Let's all really put in the effort this offseason and go for it next year, and we're feeling it, boys. And I guess there were just people rolling their eyes in the room, like, can you be serious right now?
I guarantee you, Kawhi was one of them.
Yeah, probably. Kawhi would have just stared at him and said, shut your yip.
Yeah, but you're not here for Kawhi that speech wasn't. Right now. You're here to win the championship, pal. Not that nonsense.
And Kawhi was no good either. I mean, he'd probably be looking at his own performance. But, you know, I just always hated the lip service because it's lip service. It's trying. It's somebody trying
especially
to make himself
especially when you stink
to
join out. Yeah. Like, when you stink to join out, no one wants to hear your voice.
Right. Like, where was that speech before the game? Why didn't he step up before the game?
How about saying to your teammates, I got to be way better.
Exactly.
I'm
going
to push it to the limit and get better and get us back to the championship. That's what me and Noodles do for this show. And I don't know where you're at. You're the Paul George of overdrive.
I agree. I just think Paul George should have stood up. If he wanted to say something, he'd say, I'm going to work hard in this offseason, guys, and I'm going to be a lot better.
That's a speech. You're right. I let you down. I was brutal. It'll never happen again. If we all get a chance to ride again next year, boys, let's go. Not, hey, let's put in the work. We got it next year. Hey, is Doc Rivers listening? Is Steve Ballmer out there? I hope he's hearing this heroic speech.
Pretty cool.
Loser's race.
Loser's race. It's a loser's
O brings race. That for this show. That's what he does. You know, he'll stand up and say that in the room.
The proper speech, courtesy of the O-Dog. Hour two up next. Race coming up. Marcellus Wiley at 5:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.